Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 4, Page Turner.
Statement of Dominic Swain, regarding a book briefly in his possession in the winter of 2012. Original statement given June 28, 2013. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. I work as a theatre technician in various venues around the West End. I mainly deal with lights, but a lot of the smaller venues can't afford large crews for their productions, so you end up doing a little bit of everything. I guess that's not directly relevant to my experience, but I just want you to know that I'm not some crazy person wandering in off the street. I work, I do practical things with my hands, and I am not prone to crazed flights of fancy. That day, I was going to see a matinee performance of the Trojan Women at the Gate Theatre up in Notting Hill. A friend of mine, Catherine Mendez, was in it, and had been trying to get me to come to see it for a while. We'd worked together on a production of The Seagull a couple of years before, and had had a bit of a thing going back then. At this point, I had just become single, so was keen to meet up and see if any of the old spark remained. I ended up going along on the afternoon of Saturday the 10th of November. I remember the date exactly. There had been a lot of back and forth about it, since we were both involved in separate shows at the time, making evenings difficult. So, on Saturday afternoon, I found myself in Notting Hill Gate, killing an hour or two before the show was due to start. Now, Notting Hill is not somewhere I go often, as it tends towards the pricey, even for London. And I'm not sure how much you know about theatre techs, but we're not generally an overpaid profession. Still, I had some vague memories of there being an Oxfam charity shop somewhere nearby, as I'd previously bought quite a nice old military tunic there, which remains one of my favourite jackets. I found it without any problems and spent 10 minutes or so looking over the clothes and knick-knacks, but was a bit disappointed. It was smaller than I remembered, and just seemed to contain the same tedious curios as every other charity shop. I still had some time to kill, though, so I decided to have a look through their books, something I rarely bother doing usually. I found the book on the science fiction and fantasy shelf. At first, I assumed it was some sort of faux leather special edition, and I was sure whoever put it out for sale must have done the same, because the price on it was only £4. There was something about it that made me take another look, though, and picking it up, I felt the binding, and realized it might well have been bound in real leather, probably calf, given how soft it was. I'm not an expert on books by any means, but it seemed old, and I thought it might have been hand-bound, as the pages were slightly uneven. There was no dust wrapper on it, and the front had no title, but embossed on the spine in faded gold letters were the words Ex Altiora. I did some Latin in school when I was a child, but I haven't had much cause to use it since, so you'll have to forgive me if my translations don't make much sense, but I believe it meant from higher, or out of the heights. I was astounded, to say the least. The book was clearly worth far more than it was being sold for. If the shop clerk who put it out had been paying any attention, it would have been in the glass case where they kept those things people donated that were actually valuable. I had a flick through, but it seemed to be entirely written in Latin, so I didn't have much luck discerning what it was about. The only English seemed to be a bookplate at the front that read, "From the Library of Jürgen Leitner," although no author was listed. There were also several black and white illustrations, woodcuts, I think, each showing a mountain or a cliff, or in one picture, what appeared to be an empty night sky. I felt an odd sensation when I looked at that image, as though, simple as it was, I was about to fall into it. My stomach gave an odd jolt, almost causing me to drop the book in the middle of Oxfam. I made up my mind to buy it. Even if I never figured out how to read the thing, it was clearly worth a lot more than they were selling it for. I felt like a bit of an arse for not letting them know how valuable it was, almost like I was stealing money from the charity. But in the end, I realized that it wasn't my job to set the prices in this shop, and besides, this book absolutely fascinated me. The woman working the till didn't even raise an eyebrow when I brought it over and paid my £4. I headed out, hoping to find a cafe where I could sit and have another look through. But it was then that I noticed the time. I'd somehow managed to spend an hour in that shop. Now I was very nearly late for Catherine's play. I made it in time, luckily, though I had to run a bit. The show was fine. I've never been a particular fan of Greek plays, and this interpretation was not the one to win me round to them. Catherine was excellent, of course, but the rest of the show was quite frankly a bit pedestrian. Still, I'm not a theatre critic, and I wasn't exactly paying it my full attention, as I was convinced there was a problem with the stage lights. Throughout the show, I kept getting the faintest smell of ozone, and was worried. The only other time I'd smelled that in the theatre was when one of my stagehands had accidentally ordered the wrong sort of light, and we'd ended up installing a projector with a xenon mercury lamp, the sort used to sterilise medical equipment with UV. I spotted the issue before anything happened, but I still remember that intense ozone smell. Still, no one else seemed to notice it, and I couldn't see anything in their light setup that would have caused the odour, so I tried my best to ignore it. After the performance was finished, Catherine and I grabbed a quick dinner before heading to our respective evening shows. I was disappointed to discover that whatever attraction there had been between us seemed to have vanished completely, and while we spent a pleasant enough couple of hours together, it was obvious that neither of us wanted to take it any further. I did show her the book, though. She knew even less Latin than I did, but was impressed. She said it looked valuable and that I should take it somewhere to be appraised, although she didn't look through it in any detail, as the pictures triggered her vertigo for some reason. Nothing of note occurred after I left, and I did my show, a production of Much Ado About Nothing, down at the Courtyard Theatre, with no problems. I returned home late, having gone for a drink with the stage manager and a couple of the actors, and felt far too awake to just go to bed. So I poured myself a small gin and tonic and decided to look through this book in more detail. Oddly enough, I somehow hadn't learned any more Latin since I bought it 12 hours before, so reading it was still out of the question. But I went through and had a closer look at those woodcuts. There were about a dozen that I found, mostly mountains and cliffs, but one appeared to be a tower, looming over the surrounding countryside at an odd angle, with tiny birds just visible circling the summit. And then there was that picture of an empty sky. I've never had any fear of heights, but staring at that picture, I felt... I don't know, really. I just couldn't look at it for too long. It seemed to open forever, nothing to do but fall into it. It was even stranger as there wasn't much to the picture itself except for black ink and a few stylized stars. But something in the proportions just had that effect on me. I decided that maybe Catherine had been right and it might be valuable as an antique, so I did some research to try and find out more about it. Latin fell out of favour as a language for academic texts in the 18th century, and I really doubted the thing was that old. Since then, it was only really used for religious texts, but the book certainly didn't look like it was full of prayers. Searching Ex Altiora online didn't do much good. The phrase was used in a few old prayers. There was a company called Altiora and something in Italian about football, but nothing that looked even remotely like it related to my book. Searching for Jürgen Leitner wasn't much better. It brought up an entry for an Austrian musician and a few Facebook pages, although they all seemed to have umlauts in their names, unlike the one in the book, and none of them looked like the sorts to have a library full of strange Latin texts. The only thing I found that looked even remotely relevant was a listing on eBay from 2007. The auction was titled Key of Solomon, 1863, owned by MacGregor Mathers and Jürgen Leitner, and had been won for just over £1,200 by a deactivated user, GR Bookworm 1818. There was no picture or description, just the title and the winning bid. I decided to call it a night and go to bed. I think I had a nightmare, but I don't remember the details. I slept in very late the next day, and by the time I awoke there wasn't much daylight left, but I spent the hours until my show contacting book dealers that I'd looked up online. All of them put the book's age between 100 and 150 years, and said it looked like it had been custom-bound.
Most offered to buy it off me for a few hundred pounds, but at this point I was more interested in information about it. Unfortunately, none of them had heard of it before, or seemed at all familiar with its contents. The last seller I went to did recognize the name Jürgen Leitner, though. She told me Leitner had been a big name in the literary scene during the 1990s, some rich Scandinavian recluse paying absurd amounts of money for whatever books took his fancy. It was said he'd often have books custom bound after providing a manuscript, or even commission authors to produce works to his brief, although she didn't actually know any writers who had worked with Leitner. He dropped from public view somewhere around 95, but she recalled he used to have extensive dealings with Pinhole Books down in Morden, and gave me the details for Mary Key, who owned it. I went and I did my show after that, the last night of the run, in point of fact, but though I didn't miss a single lighting cue, all through it, I just couldn't take my mind off the book. I felt as though there was something I was missing just beyond my grasp, and all throughout I could detect that same faint smell of ozone. Or was it ozone? There was something else there, something I knew but could not remember. Every time I felt I was close, I was overcome with a dizziness and nausea that threatened to topple me over. I skipped the cast party afterwards, instead going for a long walk to clear my head in the cold November air. I don't know how long I walked for. It must have been hours, but it felt right, like it was all I could do. Walking felt as natural as falling. It was only when a man shouted at me for almost walking into him that I stopped and took stock of my surroundings. I had no idea where I was. I took out my phone to find the nearest station and saw that I was only a street away from Morden. I felt dizzy all of a sudden, and when I looked at the building I was stood in front of, I was not in the least bit surprised to see a brass plaque reading, "Pinhole Books, by appointment only," next to an unmarked door of dark-stained wood. I rang the doorbell and waited. The woman who opened the door wasn't at all what I was expecting. She was very old and painfully thin, but her head was completely clean-shaven, and every square inch of skin I could see was tattooed over with closely written words in a script I didn't recognize. She stood at the bottom of a flight of stairs, and from the top I could hear the sound of death metal blaring out of some powerful speakers. I wondered for a moment if she got complaints from the neighbors playing it so loudly at 2 o'clock in the morning, and realized with a start that it was actually 2 o'clock in the morning.